Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
What does 2022 hold for you? Today I'm talking to our experts at Rainmaker about what lies ahead in 2022. I have with me Alex Dunnan, Head of Research, and Karen Vergara, Senior Journalist at Financial Standard. Thank you both for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you, Julia.
Alex, what are you looking at to 2022 to provide in terms of superannuation changes and changes to what people are thinking about their investments for the year?
Well, getting into the prediction game is pretty hard. My mother's a clairvoyant. I'm not. But if we want to start to work out what might be happening this year, well, let's start by looking at what happened last year. As awful as the pandemic has been, for investments, it's about as good as it gets. I mean, super funds finished last year earning 15%. Housing earned 20%. The stock market earned 17%. I mean, we've just gone through a year where we've had the best super fund returns in 34 years. I mean, it's just been a mozza. If you had some investments, if you had a mortgage on even an average house, and if you had even just $100,000 in superannuation, the average person in that position made $200,000 profit, tax-free. I mean, that's unbelievable outcome for the year. And the big question is, what's going to happen this year? Well, why don't we flip it around? What's going to go wrong that's going to suddenly make housing crash? What's going to go wrong that's going to make the share market crash? And if we do come out of the pandemic, there's a lot of pent-up demand out there. It's got to go somewhere. It's probably going to go into company earnings and therefore into share prices. And if share prices go well, super funds will go well. So you start to think about what might happen through 2022. Well, it may not be as fantastic as 2021, but odds are that it may not be too much shy of it either. So we could be in for another pretty strong year. There will be ups and downs. There is a nervous time. We couldn't have started the year in a more terrible way. But at the same time, I'm really optimistic as to where we're heading as an economy, as a country, around the planet. Maybe we are going to get through this pandemic and the good times could come back.
Karen, you've spoken to some of your financial advisors about what their clients are concerned about. And I believe that market volatility was one of the main concerns that you heard back from them.
Yes, that's right, Julia. They gave us five main themes that they were concerned about this year. And in no particular order, market volatility was one of them. So the ongoing local and international volatility in the share markets is a major concern for clients, particularly within the tech stocks. Clients are wondering where the markets are going from here and what this means for their wealth position.
And are they still prepared to keep money in the market, or are they looking at what to do with excess money? What's the situation?
Well, that's what a lot of advisors are faced with at the moment. How do we wisely invest this money? Because interest rates are so low. It's great that they're so low for people borrowing money, but it's an issue for those investing money, particularly retirees. That's what I'm hearing from these advisors. So as you know, retirees are very conservative in their nature, but with cash rates earning next to nothing and fixed interest rates in some cases going backwards or negative in the last 12 months, advisors are very hesitant to invest in defensive assets because clients' money is basically going nowhere and potentially making a loss.
That raises a really important question there, because interest rates at 6,000-year lows, I mean, they don't go any lower than where they are now. We are seeing inflation around the planet. I mean, the US has just declared 7% inflation. I mean, so for the Democrats over there go the midterms. We've got White House gridlock just waiting for us again. So, you know, awful. But when you've got 7% inflation, the real question is how's it going to flow into Australia? Well, it's got seeing it already, not quite at that level, but it's, you know, we are going to have inflation for a while. When you have inflation, interest rates do creep up. If you're a bank, we've got to bear in mind that all the money we borrow from banks, 40% of that comes from overseas credit markets. So we are going to be paying high interest rates. It's going to drag up other interest rates in the economy. And it therefore means that the price of fixed interest bonds is going to go down, maybe even crash. Already, fixed interest investments are returning on average negative returns. So totally reinforcing everything Karen just said in the feedback from financial planners, if you're relying on fixed interest investments, hang on to your hat, you're going to have a really bad year.
Absolutely, Alex. And with what you mentioned about inflation, the supply chain issues aren't improving. They're just, I guess, plateauing. So that's not helping inflation across the world, is it?
No, it's a really rough time. And the supply chain is just devastating everyone everywhere. And all the indications are we haven't seen the worst of it, notwithstanding that shipping costs seem to be coming down a little bit, but they're coming down a little bit from all-time highs.
Absolutely.
So one of the other issues that obviously you've heard from financial advisors and we've also seen from our money readers and what they're interested in is getting into the property market. And obviously it's going to be a lot harder as the prices have gone up so much in the past year. But, you know, if the interest rates are also going up, will there be some sell-off in the property market? Will prices perhaps go down? What do you think will happen there, Alex?
Well, what I really enjoy about looking at those kind of property price predictions is reading what other experts are saying. And what I've gathered so far this year is it's going to range somewhere from a crash of 50% to an increase of 100%. So somewhere between there, we're going to find our reality. And while I'm being a bit cynical, I think what the message is, no one really knows, because we're just in such wild, unpredictable, volatile times that you're a fool to try and pick the property market predicted to at a too fine a point. There are just so many factors in play. I mean, one of the big issues is it seems to be impacting how people are talking about this. Do we still have the vibe where people want to be upscaling, buying bigger houses, perhaps buying into regional areas, perhaps even maybe moving into regional areas that are not just 1 hour from the big cities, but maybe 2 hours drive from the big cities? And then on top of that, are we going to continue to work remotely? Is anyone going to come back to the working in the CBD? So my cafes will start reopening. So, and even though maybe I'm rambling a little bit, but there's a lot of forces in play, but I still come back to the really big picture. There's a lot of money in the economy. It's, as we start to recover, it's going to start to unleash itself. Does that sound like we're going to be having an economy that's going to start to close up shop and therefore house prices are going to come down? And if interest rates go up, what are they going to go up to? They might go up from, say, 3% to 4%, or even if they went to 5%. You know, I'm 59. I don't want to sound like an old person. But when I bought my house, I was paying 17% interest rates, and people are getting worried about 4% interest rates. I mean, come on. I mean, it can get a lot worse than that.
I know exactly when you were talking about, Alex, when those interest rates were really high. Do you think perhaps it's an issue that's going to affect people differently? Like getting into the property market might be difficult for people who might be going to earn less and, you know, have had struggles finding work in this economy. Do you think there's investors who are going to make even more money because of the opportunities that they have in the market? There has been a lot of change to the makeup of the economy in this COVID period.
Well, for home buyers, it's always going to be difficult. I mean, you know, my son's 22 and I know that we're going to have to help Oscar get into the market at some point in some way, somewhere. But the thing is, there aren't that many first home buyers. So we know that government isn't going to try and reform the economy to make it easier for home buyers, because to do that disenfranchises the millions of people that do own property already. So we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. But interest rates, they will go up a little bit, but not to devastating levels. So perhaps we need to chill down and not worry too much about that. But then you've also got the supply issues. We're not making more land, we're not making more property. And at the same time, the parts of the economy are cooking. You know, we talk about the great resignation, though perhaps that could be a little bit overplayed in Australia. But there's going to be some wage push inflation. People might have more wages and therefore more money to spend on housing. So you put all this together, and does that sound like a recipe for housing getting cheaper? Not really. It might not go up as fast, but to say it's going to, start going negative is a really, really big call. But also, let's have a think about over the last sort of 5 years, the average house price across the country only went up by 5% per annum. When we talk about housing prices, we're very focused on what happened last year. And last year was a really, really crazy year. Can you have two really, really crazy years in a row? That's a big call. I'd be a little bit speculative about that one.
And I think some of that, you know, when you look at the pricing of housing and you're saying that the average housing price, you know, went up 5%, there was a big difference between units and house prices in most regions. And, you know, I guess that was the idea of people staying at home and wanting a little bit more space. So I guess there's a bit of room to make up there if units start rising as well. What are you finding that advisors are hearing about people and their properties, Karen?
Well, a lot of the advisors that I talk to are advocating for these accumulators, and many of them are just starting out on their wealth creation journey. And their dream home is always top of their conversation. So in seeing the massive rises over the past year and when COVID hit in early 2020, so many of these clients, they're young, by the way, are wondering how they're going to afford a home that they'll love and that they'll be comfortable in. So it's a big worry.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you were in that market last year. Karen, how did you feel?
Absolutely.
Upgrading in that kind of market.
Well, funny you mentioned that, because one of the main reasons we upgraded was because my husband and I were forced to work from home, and our place was a little bit too small for our liking. So we needed that extra space because I had to work in the living room and he had to work in the bedroom, and then there wasn't enough space. So we decided to upgrade at a time when prices were booming. It was great that we were able to sell our house for a good price, but then, you know, conversely, we had to pay a premium to buy a new house. So it was a catch-22 in a lot of ways. But looking back on it, and, you know, keeping in mind all the stress that it came with, I'm glad we did upgrade, even in this market.
Did you feel that you had to compromise because the prices were going up so much?
Oh, absolutely. My agent gave us some really good advice. She said, you can't have everything that you want on your list. And it's true. We had to compromise. I think we wanted an extra bedroom, but we got a study instead, for example. But then we got a bigger land size. So looking towards the future, we could always renovate.
So I guess, you know, whatever you're investing in, the property, shares and so on, I guess tax comes next for the advisors, and that's always a big issue, isn't it?
It's a big issue, but it's also been an issue year in and year out among advisors and clients. Australians know that they're paying a lot of tax, but they also know that there are heaps of opportunities to help them minimise the amount that they're paying, but they're very confused and they actually don't know where to start in terms of educating themselves and familiarising themselves with the rules.
That's a really good point as well, because we're not going to be reforming our taxation system anytime soon. Politically, it is just too hard. We have an election coming up sometime in the first part of this year. Who knows how that's going to play out? I'll leave other political pundits to sort of try and second guess that one. But one thing we have learned is that if any political party that tries to get too aggressive with tax reform just isn't going to get anywhere near winning government. And you're probably going to see the same type of thing again. And then even if they are successful, if the Liberal National Party win the election again, do you think they're really going to push hard on tax reform? Because it'll probably be a very, very fractious parliament, a fractious Senate. They're not going to invest political capital on something like this. If the Labor Party were to win government, they're going to be just as gun shy. So we're going to keep talking about how we'd love tax reform, but we're not going to get it because it's just too hard, and we just do not like reforming taxation too much in this country. It becomes a really divisive political issue, and it usually ends in a lot of pain.
Karen, one of our most popular stories on Money Magazine Online last year was the story that you wrote about your superannuation and how much you had in super and how you were, you know, ahead of the average. And I guess that showed that people are really engaged with super these days, and especially younger people. We're finding that the people that are asking questions to our experts are younger. Are you finding that advisors are also seeing younger clients, that people are getting involved earlier in their super and other financial matters?
Absolutely. That's one of the first conversations off the bat with financial advisors and clients is, tell me about your super. Are you in a default fund? Are you a choice member? Are you in an SMSF? So more and more particularly with the first home super saver scheme, super has become, you know, has, how do you say it, come to the table or has become a centerpiece of the conversation when, you know, we keep hearing so many reports that the younger generation are not engaged with super. I think that's turning a corner because a lot of the advisors that I have talked to, they put super in front of clients first and foremost when they do the fact find. So, yeah, there's definitely a changing tide there.
My son's, as I was saying before, he's at university. He's 22. Now, he's not a normal person. He's part of my my household. Oscar's been helping us out with research here at Rainmaker for quite a few years. He's been coming to the office since he was four. You know, when he was 15, he was talking about, he knew what a hedge fund was and what a fund manager was. But what's been really fascinating is Oscar will go to university parties and he'll end up talking about superannuation to some of his friends. And they'll be asking questions like, what fund am I in? How do I know what fund am I in? How do I know it's any good? What do I do if my employer is not paying me? And we all know that small businesses have a habit of not paying their full entitlements to some of their casual staff. And then he'll come home and he'll be getting Facebook posts in the middle of the night with other friends asking him the same questions. And I know this is a very contrived audience, but at the same time, it makes me think totally what Karen is saying. I think this idea that people are disengaged with super and younger folks hate super, I think it's a really old world idea. I don't buy it. Now, that doesn't mean every one of them is interested in super, but there's a lot more interest in engagement out there than we probably realise. And is there a day that we don't have superannuation? If it's not on the front page of the media, it's probably on page two or three. It's in your face. It's everywhere now. Ethical investments is there. And I think we're starting to see that this is a living, breathing part of the economy.
Absolutely.
You know, the fact that you can see your super along with your bank balance in certain situations makes it a bit more engaging. And I know that, you know, not even last year, 2020, when the super fund balances went down at the start of COVID, it was really confronting to see, you know, watching your balance go down. But since this year has been so healthy in returns, I guess, you know, it's easier to keep engaged with it. And the other thing that we're finding with Money Magazine is that so many Australians are now investing in ETFs, so just wanting that bit of a taste of the stock market. And even when they don't know what stocks to invest in, they're finding that ETFs are the way in. Is that something that you're both seeing in your world?
I mean, ETFs are just taking the world by storm. And I suppose one of the really fascinating things is, well, it's just so easy. They're so efficient. And they're also so good at doing what they do. And what I'm really saying there is I'm having a dig at some of our active investment managers out there. Some of them are very, very good, but there's a lot of bottom feeders out there. There's a lot of stragglers who try as they might, they continually get beaten by the stock market index. And if they can't beat the index, then they should go and find another business to ply their trade on, because if you're an investor, it's pretty hard to go past some of those index funds right now. And even some, you look at what super funds are delivering. So many super funds struggle to beat the index. And you put all this together, combined with ease of access, online brokers, you can go to any of those online brokers that we talk about in Money Mag and elsewhere. And for almost zero fees in some cases, you got yourself stock market exposure, and it's just such a great way to invest money. It's so easy, and you dare say that we've only just begun that adventure in Australia. It's going to just totally transform the investment market in this country, I can guarantee it.
And would you say that it's predominantly younger people who are investing in ETFs?
I can't speak to that. I'd be surprised. That might be getting a little bit carried away. But what you're probably going to start to see is seasoned investors are realising they are just such a great solution. And also have a look at what the fund managers themselves are doing. There are a lot of them out there now who are converting their regular managed funds into ETFs. And so they're taking a lot of established money out there. So it's an easy way for young people to get into the game. But a lot of the older folks are probably realising, hey, I should have been doing this years ago because it's just so easy to do. The returns, by definition, they at least match the market, and you're having so much choice and flexibility. And then we start to look at some of these new thematic ETFs, where I can pick an ETF that gets me into sustainability stocks or overseas stocks or stocks to do with the electric vehicle industry or whatever it is. And it really just gives a really accessible flavour. And it's, as I was saying before, it's just so easy. And it's transformed the US market, and it's going to do the same in Australia, and it's going to put the financial industry on notice that it's really got to get its act together because it's just being disrupted. And if they don't get into this, they're going to be left behind.
Now, finally, something a little bit different, Karen. I've spoken to a few financial advisors over the past year or so, and life insurance has really had a shake-up. You know, it's got really expensive and it's been difficult for the insurance companies to make money, for the advisors to keep their clients insured. What have you heard in that area?
Absolutely, Julia. This is a major, major bugbear for clients as well as advisors because many advisors have told me that it is the most difficult conversation taking place between them. Life insurers are increasing their premiums across the board. And within the last 12 to 18 months or so, we've seen like a second rate increase, which is unheard of. And premiums are rocketing about 20 to 25% per year. So we have a scenario, many scenarios where advisors are typically, you know, they help clients find the right cover for their budget, but now advisors are having to convince clients to keep their insurance or reduce it and try to prevent them from cancelling it altogether.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one. And has there been any effect with COVID? Has that had any impact on life insurance for people?
Oh, absolutely. So many people have come down with the virus, which has compounded other underlying health conditions that they've had. So it has made applying for life insurance more difficult, particularly for advisors who are acting on behalf of the clients, because some insurers want clients to prove that they are not showing any COVID symptoms for 60 or 90 days, even well before considering taking them on within their policy.
That's really difficult because, you know, we all don't know enough about COVID to know what the symptoms and the length of symptoms is, and I guess that makes it, you know, everyone's trying to make new policy on the run from the government to the insurance company. So I guess that makes it really difficult for the advisors and for clients to keep covered.
Another angle that's really important there is that one of the big factors, big themes that's really pushing up the cost of insurance is mental well-being, mental illness. Mm. And if you look at what COVID is doing, it's really, is it going to release a tsunami of mental health concerns? If the answer to that is yes, even in a tiny and a partial way, well, if you're an insurer, you're going to have no option but to start to increase your premiums probably even more aggressively because mental health is going to become a really big, big issue for them. And it's going to then drive up probably TPD claims, total permanent disability claims, income protection claims, and that's actually the most expensive part of life insurance. The death component, just insuring me, you know, for when I die, that type of insurance is actually pretty low cost. It's pretty simple. It's the other types of insurance, the TPDs and the income protections, which is where the real expense is, and that's where the pressure points are. And COVID could have a really nasty impact on that. So I think it echoes what Karen was saying a thousandfold.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. I think that's given everybody a lot to think about. So we're looking at 2022 as a potentially positive year. We're looking at all the factors that have helped keep the economy healthy in 2021 continuing. We may have an inflation issue, we're still to see. We're unlikely to have any tax changes, as you say, Alex, because the government's unlikely to make any, whichever one gets in at the election. And I guess readers need to be aware of the issues with life insurance and, you know, how to make the most in these continuing low interest rate environment. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a fantastic pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia.
You've been listening to Alex Dunnan and Karen Vergara here on Friends with Money. Please remember to subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au.
Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.